Hey, everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky, no Andy Kamenetsky, but I've got something much better. The Lakers, they are not holding any picks right now for Thursday's draft, but they're widely expected to buy their way into the second round. Who should they target? What players might they want to pick up? Nobody better to discuss all this than Mike Garcia, Lakers draft expert, and that is next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how you get your podcasts, where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to get the podcast, even usually a little bit earlier, a few hours before the audio product. Plus, you get to look at us, which is that much better. And if you're watching today, you don't get to look at Andy and Brian Kamenetsky because that's lame. You get to look at Mike Garcia, Lakers draft expert. And you can find him at lakersdraft.substack.com. You find him on Twitter at Canyon Driver. Lakers fans, you know, the guys who populate the Reddit chat boards and deep into Lakers Twitter, they know Mike. He is a guy that we get requests all the time. Can you get him on the show? And a perfect guy to talk about to preview the draft because he understands what's happening a little further down the board, which is where the Lakers might end up finding some talent. Mike, thanks so much for coming on, man. We appreciate it. I appreciate it. Andy does too, from wherever he is right now.
No, I appreciate the invite. Thank you very much for having me.
So I say this truly. We were joking before we started taping. Like when we get to the part of this show where you start throwing some names out, giving Lakers fans an idea of the kinds of players, the names of, and where they come from, the pedigrees and stuff of guys, you could make up names. Like you could just invent human beings whole cloth. Because I have no idea. There is not a person who runs a basketball podcast who knows less about the college game and prospects than me, other than maybe my brother. So that is what you're working with here. So please be kind. I want to start though. People, when you read draft boards, you read all this other stuff, people talk about the depth up top. Like, is this a 5-person draft, an 8-person draft, 12, 15, whatever. None of that really matters for the Lakers, who are very unlikely to get a first-round pick. But the depth between, say, 25 and 60 matters a ton for the Lakers, who might want to buy into the second round or grab somebody who doesn't get drafted on the free agent market as soon as the draft is over. What does that part of the of Thursday's draft look like?
So for the upcoming draft, it's one of the rare times where I really, really wish the Lakers did have that first rounder, early second round pick. It just so happens that this year in particular, there's a lot of wings in this draft, and it's not just at the top. They're all relatively the same tier of talent from that mid first to mid second. So when I read briefly that, hey, the Lakers are looking to buy a pick into that mid second round, there's an opportunity there to actually get one of those players who may actually be better than their draft position projects.
So is there, if let's say, you know, I've read reports, you know, certainly the Lakers are going to try to get their way into the second round, but there's no rule that says you can't do it more than once. Like you can find ways to pick up a couple different picks. How well could they do? Let's say they buy in at, you know, 42 and then again at 57 or whatever. Is the expectation that there could be some legitimate NBA talent available there?
Yes, and I think that happened clearly last year with how Austin Reeves turned out and played the regular season.
Right.
But just to also keep in mind that, hey, Joel Ayayi was a really good prospect. It didn't really work out in the Lakers' favor, but he was considered that tier of player. And even Trevelyan Queen for the South Bay Laker team, like he played preseason for the parent team, and then he ended up getting a guaranteed contract with the Houston Rockets. So even with these late projected picks or undrafted picks or unsigned free agents, there is some NBA talent to be found. With this upcoming draft, there's some similarity with that. I think the talent pool is a little bit thinner than I would usually like. And usually when you, as I mentioned earlier, there's the 25 to 40th pick where there's a lot of wings and chances are somebody might slip down that much farther. Some teams, they just draft by position or they want to keep someone overseas for a little bit longer. So they'll use those picks between 25 to 40 to stash a guy or, hey, I don't need to rely on immediate impact. And then good guys get pushed further down. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I'm looking for this draft. And that's kind of what I saw with last year's draft with Austin Reeves and Joel Uyayi as well.
What makes a guy a good candidate to look for? Because obviously, you know, if you're being drafted 38th, 39th, 40th, like you're not a bad basketball player, but there's something that teams see as a flaw. Maybe you don't, you're not quite as explosive. Maybe your outside shot isn't as good. How do teams most effectively kind of filter through what doesn't work about a prospect and find the stuff that does?
I think there's a lot that goes into what skills they value the most. Mm-hmm. So for example, let's just take the extreme example. Let's just take a look at Stephen Curry. Oh, hey, he's too small. He can't really defend. He's not the most athletic guard. But what's the thing that he can do? He can shoot, right? That seems pretty obvious. But when a team sees the shooting and then they look at, hey, he can handle the ball a little bit. Maybe he can run an offense. Is that enough skill set wise to keep him on the floor and have him be a productive player? Can we live through that? Well, in his case, the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. So when I'm looking at guys that slip further down in the draft, it's what's your specialty? What can you do on both ends of the floor? And can you stay on the floor more or less? Some teams like to look at projection. It's a 19-year-old player. We can turn him into this. Well, if you're 20, 21, 22, even 23, and I know you're a good three-point shooter, and I know you can defend a position particularly well, to me, that says you're an NBA player. You're playable on the floor. You should be drafted. So sometimes those guys slip down. And in the Lakers case, you know, it's a good opportunity to take advantage of those kinds of things.
How many things it was interesting you mentioned, like staying on the floor. How many things go into the idea of being able to do that? I mean, obviously, you know, you're probably not going to find a superstar. Nikola Jokic is the exception to the rule in the second round. I think we can all agree. But like, what is the threshold generally that allows a player to be drafted in the second round to take that one skill, whether it's three-point shooting, defense, rebounding, whatever it is, and parlay that into something that allows them to be on the floor enough to make it useful?
So let's use Austin Reeves as a good case. Mm-hmm. So when I watched his development, I knew that three-point shooting was going to be there. He had a 4 years of a college career, and he was able to show that outside of his redshirt year. But the thing that stuck out to me was, hey, if the shot doesn't work, what skills can you provide on the floor that make you playable still? And that motor on defense was always there. The ability to attack a defense, whether or not he's taking a shot, was always there. So, hey, those are ancillary skills that are also important for any team in the league. So when I'm looking at a guy, it's, okay, if they take away my best weapon, what else can I do to be productive? And that's usually what I'm looking for later on in the draft.
What do you feel like with Reeves specifically now that he's sort of established himself as a legit NBA player? The three-point shooting, I think everybody hopes it improves. If he becomes a 37, 38% three-point shooter, it's like, wow, now we're really talking about something, right? Something, you know, very special coming out of the second round. But he's a little bit older. So when you have I think he's either turning 24 or just turned 24 or something like that. As a team evaluating, you mentioned the 19-year-old versus the 22, 23, 24-year-old. How do you balance those two things in terms of expectations, in terms of trying to figure out how useful or quickly useful a player might be and all that kind of stuff?
So one of the primary things I look for in a prospect is how physically they play. Mm-hmm. That goes beyond just, oh, I'm going to set a screen or I need to box out a guy. It's looking for micro skills. It's, you know, sometimes you see a guy attacking the basket and then with their off arm, they'll kind of grab a defender's hand. Or they'll shield a little bit in order to open up the space for them to attack the basket. Or they'll box out in a certain way that looks instinctual, like they can find their assignment quickly. So that kind of physicality is what I'm looking for. Those are the things that really lead to what an NBA player looks like. If you have a guy that's a good three-point shooter and there's gaps with, hey, he gets bothered by physicality, let's just play him physical and then he's going to take himself out, then that's not really a guy that's playable on the floor. But we saw with Austin Reeves last year, he has the motor, he played up to that physicality, and it doesn't matter if he's a big guard or an overpowering guard. As long as he's willing to try and play physical, that goes miles, and he had a really successful rookie year because of that.
All right, so we're going to get into some names as we go along here and some players that fans might want to look for, especially as the second round rolls around or even after the draft, undrafted free agent guys that the Lakers might want to look for. We'll get into that in a second. But next, I want to get your thoughts on why the Lakers have been so successful at finding players like this. You know, whether it's an Austin Reeves, Talen Horton Tucker, who, while frustrating last year, certainly as a second round pick has proven to be a pretty successful one in terms of that. And so I want to kind of unpack all that stuff, and we'll do it next. First, I do want to let you know that betonline.net is your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports information. Find out all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, and of course the NBA draft. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And betonline.net remains the best spot for all your podcasts, news, and scores this season. So BetOnline is the easiest way to check all the information you need, whether it's the draft, whether it's the, you know, the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs, which the way Colorado's playing may not last very long, as we get into to more stuff with the NBA and teams fill out their rosters and all. This is where you're going to want to go to get all the overs and unders and the fun prop bets and everything. So head to the website today. Use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. So, Mike, why have the Lakers been successful finding second round picks, drafting, and generally, like if you go back through their drafting track record, it has been very strong. Very few washouts, even in the second round. What has made them successful finding players who can fill roles at sort of the appropriate times in NBA drafts?
I think the Lakers are really good at specifying what players do best. So in Talen Horton Tucker's case, he's a ball handler. He's a shifty kind of guy who can take guys off the dribble. And at Iowa State, his role was kind of a small ball four. He played like a fourth guard out there, and he was always given the ball late in the shot clock to try to even create a shot. And it's one of those things where, hey, they're giving the ball to the 18-year-old to create a shot, and he's got veterans around him, right? Juniors and seniors. Why are they giving him the ball? Oh, because he can actually create. And then in Austin's case, he was a shooter at Wichita State and then later became a full-time point guard and handled the physicality really well, especially being the focal point of a defense. The shooting never really left. It'll show that, oh, his percentage just dropped to, say, mid-30%. And then you realize, well, he was the number one focal point of the defense. He's taking a variety of shots. They're not just catch and shoot. It's off the dribble. It's 1v1. They're all contested shots. They're shot variety. He shoots at different corners. So when the Lakers are looking at those specific things, they find out, hey, this is what they do best. These are the ancillary skills that also work to keep him on the floor. That's the guy that we like. Let's take him. So that's what I think actually goes into the thought process behind the draft.
So how do you try to project whether or not somebody like THT's college stats, like or his college shooting, whether it's really good or not so good? You know, he was a 3-point shooter. He was around 31%, I think, at Iowa State. How do you try to figure out if that flaw can translate or improve as a pro?
So there are other indicators specifically with shooting to look forward to. There's a history of players that just later improved their perimeter shooting. Like Blake Griffin is the one that sticks out the most, because here's this guy that can literally dunk everything, and then he had a shooting coach for X amount of time, and all of a sudden he's this mid-30s three-point shooter after all this time. Well, one of the things that Blake Griffin was really good at was finishing around the rim that were not dunks, right? So that shows that, hey, he has some shooting touch within 5 feet or within the key. It's really difficult to make those kinds of weird layup, different angle, teardrop kind of shots. And then there's THT, who's out there, and his free throw percentage was pretty good, but I remember his finishing around the rim was like 71.1%. That's some outlier great ability to finish around the rim. And we've seen that with him as a Laker, where
right.
he'll finish, you know, a reverse layup or take some contact with at some weird angle and still be able to finish the shot. Sometimes the shooting doesn't come immediately. Sometimes it takes a few years, but it says, hey, if you have enough touch within 5 feet and then maybe 10 feet, it's easier to project that out to the 3-point line as opposed to, let's say, someone who has stone hands and only finishes 55% around the rim.
So what flaws matter and which ones don't? Because the knock on THT in college, or at least some of them, were, first of all, he's too short, despite his, 14 and a half foot long arms. He was just too short, and then he was chubby. But as you said, people can lose weight, that helps. He's got the wingspan to compensate for height. When people look at, the types of players that the Lakers could be drafting in the second round, what flaws tend to be more problematic, and what flaws that might get a player passed on for a little bit tend to be the kind of thing where maybe teams probably shouldn't be so harsh?
So physicality, as I alluded to earlier, is one of the more important parts. It's not so much about, hey, this guy gets two steals and a block a game. It's mm-hmm. how they get it. Sometimes you're looking at a block shot and it's like, oh, he got a block shot around the rim, so he rotates on defense. Great. Does this guy block a shot defending his own man? Okay, I guess that's also good. But you're looking for kind of micro skills, as we mentioned earlier, with the physicality, using that off arm, being willing to box out, seeing recognition on the floor of, hey, who am I supposed to rotate to defense to? Who's my open man on the floor? Can I get him open? What's the right way to do that? So in terms of flaws, every player is flawed. I look at this draft like every player has something to work on. Just some are going to be able to contribute more immediately than others, and others need more work, right?
Right.
So if I see a certain player that has, hey, I think that 3-point shot is an NBA level skill because he shows it in a variety of ways, and he also does this thing defensively, I'm not really going to care too much if he's 170 pounds. The point is he can play defense to a certain level, or I'm not going to care if he's the most dynamic ball handler out of pick and roll. He's got a 3-point shot. That's a playable NBA skill. So if we take those two skills, we've got a two-way player. There's this, mm-hmm. There's a term just for that in 3-and-D, fill in the blank, right? So that it's that kind of thing. When it comes to THT, it's more along the lines of strength and conditioning comes naturally to every NBA player as soon as they're drafted. They're going to be taken on one way or another. And for me, it was, here's this guy who's short, a little bit bigger, so it looks unusual, but he's still taking guys off the dribble. How is he doing that very effectively at the college level for me to pay attention? And then he's able to finish around the rim. And for me, I saw him as kind of like a bigger wing. Hey, yeah, he's not, 6'7", 210, but he's willing to absorb contact around the rim and still finish. I think that's mm-hmm. an advantage. The wingspan helps.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The wingspan helps. The large hand helps. Just being able to manipulate the ball around the hoop a little bit easier. Those are all in Talon Horton Tucker's favor, so that's something to bank on.
So my last question on this kind of part of it is, like, a guy like Herb Jones last year turns into one of the most impactful rookies in basketball. Out of the second, and quickly, by the way, it was out of the second round, the fifth pick in the second round by New Orleans. Why does he fall? Because obviously he showed that he is a quality NBA player basically right out of the gate. How do teams miss on that, particularly later in the first round?
It's funny that you mention him, because I get a lot of requests or questions about, who's the next Herb Jones? Mm-hmm. And I think last year on my Substack, I said something along the lines of, there's always one guy in the second round that's going to defend really well, and it's probably going to be this guy, and he's going to fall because he's not known as a 3-point shooter. He's not known as a ball handler. He showed some idea of passing, but he only looks effective on the left side of the floor versus the right. Okay, so those are really weird offensive quirks. Can a team work their way around that? We saw that with the Pelicans. Yes, you have to organize a playbook a little bit differently. Maybe you have a shooting coach that can help him with that range, but the NBA defensive ability, clearly there. The physicality that we mentioned earlier, definitely there. That makes him a playable player. And defense to that level of switchability and effectiveness is always playable. The hardest part is, oh, this guy doesn't draw enough gravity on a defender, so can we play him on the floor? But Herb Jones was clearly effective, and he was a steal for the Pelicans.
And so a lot of it comes down to, like, and this is a really complicated thing to answer for the Lakers because they don't have any players. But a lot of this, it sounds like, comes down to the context of the guys that you're going to be putting him with, as much as it is their skill set. If you have a guy, you know, who doesn't profile as a great three-point shooter, but he's going to be playing on the floor with three other guys who are, I suspect that matters a little bit less. So how important is understanding the roster that you're going to be plugging a guy into? And then how challenging is that for the Lakers to figure out because they don't have a roster?
So exactly. So in terms of, you know, roster fit, which is what I think you're alluding to, I try really hard not to think about that too much.
Interesting.
I try to lean along the lines of this player can stand out for himself because he has this ability. Would it help if he had LeBron and AD next to them? Of course, but technically that's relevant to all prospects, right? Like, oh, he doesn't have gravity, but LeBron can get him open. Well, great. But if there's a player that could stand out on their own and fulfill a team weakness, let's say three-point shooting in this case, then it's that much easier. But say, for example, there's a center that I like in this draft, and I don't think the Lakers could pass him up, and he doesn't have three-point range. I'd still want him to be taken by the Lakers, either drafted or undrafted, because I think he's going to make the league, and that's the hardest part about this whole process. There's 300-plus guys that have declared for the draft. There's, well, this year there's 58 slots. How many of them are going to have long NBA careers? 20, 25, 30? And roster fit doesn't always tie into the equation of their long-term success. It's really their standout talent, what keeps them on the floor. Can they excel and build upon that? So that's the hardest part about this whole draft process.
And it's interesting. I mean, people have to understand, like, if you find a player in the second round who can play in the NBA and stay there, that is a win. It is most of the, because most, you know, as a percentage, most of those guys don't. So it's an important thing to remember. All right. Next, we're going to get into some names. I want names. I want the people that Lakers fans should be hoping for when pick 37 rolls around and there's a dude on the board and, like, you are Mike Garcia is at home screaming for Rob Pelinka to make a deal to get this guy. He's still there. I want to know those names, and we'll do that next. First, though, our friends at Built are always coming out with amazing new flavors. You know that, Mike. I know that. This is, you know, Mike Garcia, I'm sure, trains for the all of his NBA draft prep is fueled by Built Bars. That's why he's so yoked. Built has really outdone themselves with the new Mud Pie flavor. I actually had one of these earlier today for a quick snack before I took the kids off to camp. It is so good. It is the bar and the puff. If you're not sure what Mud Pie tastes like, if you like chocolate, you're good. It's got the kind of whipped creamy sort of feel and the chocolate moussey kind of feel. And like all Built Bars, it's covered in 100% real chocolate and has a little cookies and cream crumble on top. So you've got to try the Mud Pie as soon as possible. The Mud Pie bar and puff are only available for a limited time. So you visit built.com to taste the deliciousness yourself. And if for some reason, maybe you're just a crazy person, Mud Pie is not the flavor for you. You still have all the other ones. You know, birthday cake is one I've been eating a lot. And there's the cookies and cream, and there's, you know, cherry barcia and all these other great ones, all covered again in 100% real chocolate with the protein and the low in sugar and 150 calories and all that good stuff. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCK15, get 15% off your order. Again, built.com, promo code LOCK15 for 15% off your order. All right. So I gave you the scenario, Mike. It's the 36th pick, 37th pick, somewhere in there. There's a guy that has been, you know, sitting on the board. He's still there. He's still there. He's still there. And now, like, the Lakers can wait no longer. They have to buy their way into the second round. Who is this player that you are screaming at the TV for the Lakers to go get? Who's the first guy that you want to see them that they can realistically get in that kind of range?
The guy I want them to get is David Roddy. And I swear he's not a fictional name.
No, I know. I know he's real because I read your newsletter and you wrote about him.
Nicely done. I like that. So I think the reason why he slips is because, like PHT, he's kind of unusually sized. He's listed as 6'6 in shoes with, you know, at 260 pounds, right? So where do you place that guy? And, you know, my timeline is full of football references. So my whole thing is he shoots mid 40% behind the arc. He shoots mid 40% all other two-point range, which is really, really difficult to do for any guard. And then he finishes at the rim really well. And when you're watching him play, he isolates guys in the post and takes them off the dribble with a face-off game. He does pick and pop really well. He sits in quarters and takes three-point shots really well, shoots it off motion. These are all the offensive skills that we're looking for as Laker fans. We want shooting. We don't care where it comes from. We just need it, right? What makes him a little bit more unusual outside of the size is, can he defend? Now, he's not the most prolific perimeter defender, but because he's a slightly bigger guy, he's kind of a guy you have to think of.
And when you say slightly bigger, this is what he looks like. I mean, he's
he's a burly fellow. Down. Yes. And the best part about that is he doesn't shy away from contact. So he is really comfortable with defending post players, guys taller than him. And then he just shows verticality. He's able to force turnovers. He blocks shots at a 4% rate, which is really good for a 6'5 guy. So that's the guy who I'm, you know, I would hypothetically run up to the microphone and beg the Lakers to draft.
Yeah, that he's worth a couple million bucks to buy a second rounder from someone. Now, yes, what, so he's listed at 6'6. Yes. Is he one of these like dudes who's 6'6, but he's actually like 6'4, or is he actually 6'6?
I think that's 6'6 in shoes, right? It's kind of like the Talon Horton Tucker situation where he's 6'4 in shoes. So
6'4 depends on the shoes heel. That are platform shoes or act just yeah, normal exactly. shoes.
Yeah, you know, the heels matter, the number of socks you put on, the orthotics you put on, it all matters. My whole thing is, dude, that guy can get like 10 rebounds a game in 40 minutes. And does his height matter at that point? Not really. He's getting the boards, right? He could get a block and a half a game, assuming he plays the minutes. Does the height matter to me? No, because he plays bigger than his size. And that is the most difficult part of the NBA draft. We alluded to physicality earlier. He plays every bit of that, and he plays bigger than his size. And guys who can do that do really, really well in the league.
So is he one of these guys that you think is more of a prospect that in 2 or 3 years, and by the way, this is not a knock on anybody because the Lakers need young players. And I think this kid's 21 looking it up. They need young players who can be something useful in 2 or 3 years. It's not like their financial situation gets a whole lot easier over the next few years down the road. So if you can find a good player who can become a rotation player in 2 or 3 years, that's a massive win. Is he somebody who you would look forward to in a couple of years, or actually could he play next year for the Lakers?
I mean, that's a tough question. The most important part is, can he stay away from that rookie foul trouble, right? The rookies don't usually get respect from the referees, but if he can stay away from that foul trouble, yes, I expect him to defend at a certain level. I definitely expect him to rebound, and I definitely expect that three-point range to show itself and be able to provide spacing for LeBron and AD. So that's the kind of guy I'm looking for in David Roddy.
Realistically, where do you think he'll end up going in this draft?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I've seen him undrafted to late second round as early as last week. And then, you know, I'm participating in community mock drafts on Twitter, and then all of a sudden he's late first. And it's like, oh, just like that, he just got discovered? Okay, great. But that tells you the range of how quickly these things happen. That's the difference between pick 26 all the way to 60 anyway, which is the range we're alluding to earlier. So if he happens to be at that bot Laker draft spot, then I'd be more than happy to see him wear a Laker uniform.
And so people shouldn't, but like generally speaking, whether it's David Roddy or somebody else, people need to, by the time you get into the middle of the second round or the beginning of the second round, I've always thought, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, like it's time to stop looking at the board. Like, did you, there's no such thing as like, did you reach or overpay for a guy when you take him, you know, 37th because he's 52nd on this other board. By the time you get there, go get the player that you want is always, is that the right way to look at it?
That's absolutely the right way to look at it. Every team has their own different front office strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And if you're a front office that does really well with athletic players who you believe the upside in 3 years, great. That's the guy you're going to prioritize in your big board. With the Lakers, that's not really the case. It's more along the lines of, hey, can this guy play? Does it matter the age? No, not so much. Do they look a little bit different? Sure, but they can do these things on the floor. We need a guy that can play. That's the guy. The
Lakers like funny looking dudes. And this guy, I just like looking at him. He looks like, again, he'll just, if he doesn't make the roster, he can run security. All right. So the Lakers have David Roddy. The Mike Garcia draft night is off to a rip-roaring start. They've got, they found some money under the couch cushions to buy one more second round pick. Who's the next name you want?
Jabari Walker. Specifically Jabari Walker because of his defensive ability and the physicality that we alluded to earlier. We watched Stanley Johnson play with a lot of energy towards the end of last season, and that went really far for how the Lakers did towards the end of the season. He looked like a positive contributor on the floor as a role player. Jabari Walker just slides right into that exact spot. Mm-hmm. And what I like about both Stanley and Jabari is they show that defensive versatility. They're able to switch onto different players, whether it's a big or a guard, and they're comfortable within playing those defensive slots while being able to, contribute with 3-point range. So high energy guys, defensive versatility, 3-point range. That's an easy, seamless fit for the Lakers.
What would keep him? Why is he somebody who falls, further into the second round? What are the knocks on him?
Well, right now, the 3-point range, I think his percentage is around mid 30%, and it's more specifically catch and shoot 3-point shots. It's not exactly, oh, I'm going to pull up off the dribble and make a shot, or I'm going to come off a screen and make that same exact shot. It's stand in the corner. Can you make the shot at a higher clip? That'd be great. Other players, when they're in that similar position, it's more of a 40 to mid 40% kind of 3-point shooting, but he has good form. It looks textbook. The footwork looks clean, and he's able to stay on the floor because of his defensive ability and his energy. And I think that's really important. So if defenses want to leave him open for that 3-point shot, by all means, take it. It's going to be open. You might as well hit it, right? So those David Roddy and Jabari Walker would be a great draft for the Lakers overall.
And then the last thing I have for you on players is, Austin Reeves. Again, you start to look at that crew of people that they can sign after the first two rounds are over, undrafted guys. Do you expect there to be some viable players in the undrafted market? And who is a name that you think probably could go undrafted? The Lakers might want to try to, sign to a summer league or a training camp contract.
So Quentin Jackson is the guy that stands out for me. He plays at Texas A&M, and he's a 6'3", 6'4" shooting guard with, I think he has 6'5" arms, but like Austin Reeves, he has a high free throw rate. I think his free throw rate is mid 40%. And he's one of those shooters where he's good at the rim. He's low 40% mid range, and then he's mid 30s or higher behind the arc. When you watch him play, he's this high energy guard that's explosive with an open lane, but doesn't, he's willing to take the shot, whether it's contested or not. And that goes far for this team, even for, let's say, a potential South Bay candidate. That's a guy that's fun to watch, and he's an aggressive player on the floor. So yes, he's got energy. He's aggressive. He's a willing shooter. Let's go watch him.
All right. Mike Garcia, and I appreciate you not, all of the people that you named are human beings that I can verify you've written about, and I can find their pictures on the internet. So I appreciate you doing that and not taking advantage of my ignorance. But if you're looking to catch up, go to his Substack, LakersDraft.substack.com. You can find him at Canyon Driver on Twitter. great resource for Lakers fans specifically, because not only does he understand the draft and he understands these prospects and has gotten deep into, like you've heard, into the types of players that the Lakers would have access to, he also understands the Lakers and knows kind of how what they're good at, what the team is, you know, currently going through, the context of all that. So a great resource to get ready for Thursday's draft. Make sure you check his stuff out. Mike, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for the invite. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Quick reminder, Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to get the podcast a little bit early. Make Locked On Podcast your first listen of every day, and even your another one, your second listen of every day, but only after you make us your first listen. And we'll see everybody on Thursday.